There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along and great to be here at the Rubber Sale Power Equipment, their 32nd annual open house. And it's not just today. It goes on tomorrow as well. Open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. And like I said, not only on new equipment, which is kind of cool if you're looking at what's new for power equipment. You can test, I don't know, you test drive, test right. You can test out the new equipment. And on the electric side of it, it's really cool because, you know, early on, I was somebody who kind of said, yeah, electric's neat, but it's not going to have the power. Go run the chainsaw. Go run an electric chainsaw and see what I'm talking about. It's incredible. You need to check it out. And if you've got equipment like I do and you're getting parts, right now, today and tomorrow, this is what I do every year. And getting mower blades and all that kind of stuff. 15% off in-stock parts here at Robertsdale Power Equipment. So take advantage of that. And also while you're here, I mentioned last hour, but now I said you say his name three times and he appears in the mobile command unit. My friend Joey Mason from Mason Hills Farm. Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
It's good. This event was already fun. It's a lot better with steak, though.
Well, and... You know, I just wanted to make sure that we were taking care of you, Sean.
That's the most important thing. And that's when you talked about, okay, we're going to design this thing with Mason Hills Farm. The purpose of this, number one, is to make sure Sean gets steak.
That is correct.
Okay. And then everything else is behind that.
That is correct. Yeah, every Sean is...
all the things you've done, all the expansion, all the new footprints of your company, yeah. It's really, but the base... is making sure Sean gets steak.
Well, the vein of our existence, because we've been on 106.5 since the beginning, so we always want to take care of the Godfather.
There you go. As long as you bring me steak, we're good. And Executive Director at Mobile Baykeeper, our buddy William Strickland, in the Mobile Command Unit now. Good to see you.
Good to be here, as always. Just got that steak down my gullet so I can speak now. I was hoping you wouldn't call
on me. I should have called on you just a second ago. You know, I've thought about this, too. You know, we'll get, like, the air freshener things for this vehicle, like, you know, whatever, new car scent or black ice or whatever. I'm thinking if we could capture the scent of that steak. Now, this might not be, it might be more for the guys, but if I could have an air freshener made my truck smell like fresh grilled steak.
Just a daily steak ought to do the trick.
Well, that
right?
could fix it
if
as
you
well.
Just have a steak a day in the van. It'd probably smell like steak.
Well, just so, not any steak, of course.
Right.
Of course.
Yeah,
of course.
You know, but I mean, and I say that too. I mean, known for the quality of the meat you sell, you know, and all the different meats, but. Some people who don't know, well, if they don't know, they don't get out, because I swear you're at every event out there. But you are a dang good cook, man.
Well, thank you so much. You know, you have to be able to prepare it correctly so that people will want to enjoy eating it and just making it better.
I guess so. But you and I always, we talk cattle, we talk those kind of things. And I mean, I cook your steaks and all that, but I never thought about the next part of it being like, I mean, you buy this, how long is that cooking trailer?
So it's like 28 foot. It's an HBT smoker. It has a 400-pound smoker on the back, and it's got two Blackstone griddles on it. It's got two fryers. It's meant to do what we're doing.
Is that it?
Well, and it's got some other charcoal grills and TVs and, you know, different things like that. And so,
it's pretty awesome.
We're just trying to keep up with the van here.
Yeah, it's pretty well. Yeah, I think if we go travel together, we'll have the van for doing the radio, and you'll have that.
I'll have to get in on that deal as well. I don't know if we get y'all at our next event, but we'll exchange information.
Okay,
for
good.
Sure.
You talk about that. I mean, what a way, if you know, you can advertise, get people there, and you can also olfactory advertise by having the smell of steak wafting.
That's what happened to me. I got out of the car and said, like, whoa, so it's more going on here than just selling power equipment.
That's right. You've got steaks going on as well.
Well, and it's really cool that Robertsdale Power and Equipment, I know Tyler, he owns it, and we've been friends for a long time, and they really support
local. I'm not going to hold that against him. You know, still like him.
and they really support local, right? And so they gave us an opportunity last year, and here we are again this year.
Yeah, I think they'll continue to come back. By the way, too, we talked real about Mason Hills Farm, and you know, I've always talked about the online and people ordering or being able to come in person to, you know, down to the facility to buy from the shop, the retail shop.
Right.
But there's some more places now. That's an expanded footprint for y'all.
Yeah, so we've the reason you guys haven't heard me on the radio much is because I've been extremely busy. We just opened a restaurant and butcher shop in Ocean Springs, and as of yesterday, we just opened up Tuscaloosa as well. And so we're doing that as a franchise. It's our first franchise, and so we're looking to open up a few more. So if anybody is interested,
this dude's got more energy, y'all. When you get around, I mean, he's like how you pull it, but you do a great job of it.
But what you said is it's really good, this quality of beef, and so we want to be able to get in as many people's hands as we can, and it's just. I really feel like I'm doing what I'm called to do, and it's so much fun.
But, you know, the thing that came up in this discussion, and William, you know, you like about local, and we talk about local vegetables and all that thing's been a big thing. And it's funny, COVID did something where it made us, which I think was a good thing, start acting like our grandparents. Mm, like,
absolutely.
I could, you know, getting back into gardening.
A little more, but 100%,
right? Like, I was always kind of a throwback. I've always liked to garden. You know, in the old days, I mean, you locally sourced your produce and vegetables, whether you did it yourself or the folks down the corner, you know, they canned this and that, and you traded them for such and such, and you locally sourced your meat. You know, whether you got individual cuts or you bought a half of a cow or something like that, you did that. And we had drifted away from that. And then COVID, for all its gray cloud, there are some silver linings, and some of the things are people realizing that, hey, it's important to know where my food comes from.
And I think I hope folks are waking up more and more that trend continues. I was lucky enough to grow up in a family where that was the norm. Mm-hmm. So as a kid, I thought, this is what we did.
That's right.
Got married and figured out not everybody's family did that.
right.
Folks think that food comes from the grocery store and heat comes from the furnace.
Yeah.
There's not an understanding that, no, there's human beings that are doing this, working with the land, the water, or throwing a piece of wood somewhere to make sure that we can live these comfortable lives that we've grown to enjoy.
And we probably wouldn't, you know, until that calamity, people wouldn't have. They didn't have to think about it, so they didn't think about it, right? I mean, we all think about this stuff, and we're probably tuned in the same way with our upbringings, but that doesn't mean, you know, it was a thing. I remember people going, hey, do you have any meat at your house? I'm like, yeah, you know, freezer. And they're like, can I get some? Because I can't find any at the store. And you know, and then Joey and I started talking that having these packer houses and all this that are in far-flung places, then something happens, and that means you can't get the meat down here, or if you produce your own meat, where can you get it slaughtered and all that? And we didn't have that,
but we have it now.
I was gonna say, I'm sitting next to the guy right now,
right.
So I mean, this is even just emotionally for us to be able to be connected to our place. I'm sitting here talking to somebody, looking at holes in the blue jeans, going, this is where my meat came from.
Yep.
It's because this is a hard-working guy that did it, and I know he didn't do nothing to it that's going to hurt me.
Correct. That's the other thing. We know you can go look at it, and you can go talk to this guy, and you know what's in your food.
Well, and this is not a commodity to us, although it is a commodity product. This is more of a lifestyle, right? And as we've talked in the past, I don't really have to do this for a living.
Right.
But I do it because I really love it. I really love the exposure. I love people enjoying a good steak.
Yes.
You're talking about how it smells like steak in here. And it's just food brings people joy. And then these events that we're having at the farm, the, you know, all the different things that we're doing is just really fun.
It is good stuff. And keep on doing it, man. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
So Joey Mason is when you get here and you pull up in the parking lot at Robertsdale Power Equipment, you smell the smell, you know which way to walk over there to the giant.
Right.
Coming right back, more of our conversation with William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper. I'm gonna eat some steak and we'll be right back after the news.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, so welcome back. Midday Mobile live at Robertsdale Power Equipment. Glad to have y'all along. check back in on the other side of the bay with my man Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and the platinum palladium discussion. Where are we now? You've fascinated me with this.
Yeah, right now platinum palladium are almost dead even right now on as far as spot prices. Lots of people are speculating that, of course, platinum is going to overtake palladium, which is still about $7 up on the market. So I own some of both. There's nothing wrong with having a little bit of both of those metals.
And the reason for people that didn't hear us talk about it before is that this goes along with, if you look at the auto industry and say, hey, they're going to build more cars, they need more of one or the other of those metals.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, if y'all want to kind of look at the economy and figure out how it applies. What about the good old-fashioned gold and silver, Ron? How are they doing?
Yeah. There's a correction today, some profit-taking. Gold's down at $2,914.37, and silver's trading at $31.53. So great time to add to your stacks, get into gold and silver. And I do want to mention, Sean, we will be open this Saturday from 9 to 2 of people that are interested in coming by. We're open the first Saturday of every month, and that will be this Saturday.
Good stuff. And, yeah, it is a great chance because we've talked about that before. Sometimes people are just locked down during the week and can't get by, and they can come in on that Saturday and visit with you. Okay, give me this before we talk about precious metals, but I'm always looking for the play here because you've got gold and silver, but you can also get them in coins that magnify the value, right? You have the actual value of the precious metals, but holy cow, this thing's collectible. People want it. It's now worth more. What do you have me buy? What's hot right now?
Well, what's hot is everything almost, Sean. Premiums are so low right now. You can buy pre-1933 U.S. gold coins just slightly over what they melt at because there's so many coins on the market in that case. They usually trade for about 100 to 150 over. For the common date stuff right now, it's a fraction of a few dollars over melt. So great buying. They're coins, and, of course, they're made of gold. They're U.S. legal tender coins, so very popular. Gold Cougarans, there's so many that have come in the United States recently. Those are available at a very low premium over spot, too. So we've had lots of people taking advantage of that maybe were holding off because they figured gold was up over $2,900. Well, if you can save $50 over spot over what the premium used to be just a few weeks ago, that really helps it out.
Yeah, I'm no math magician, but you got my attention on that one, Ron. I like it. Tell folks how to find you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. They can find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com or just give us a call, 251-725-1590.
Hey, thanks, Ron.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins. And we are live at Robertsdale Power Equipment in the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit. I've got William Strickland from Mobile Baykeeper in here, Joey Mason with Steak. He can always come no matter what guest we have. William, you think that's pretty...
I think we should make this a requirement.
You're not going to want to come
to my contract.
Yeah, you're not going to want to come to the studio anymore.
Put it in my contract. I'm not coming without Steak.
See, now we got that working. All right, update time. You and I have talked about it, months? More than it's been quite a while, talking about where we are with the dredge disposal in Mobile Bay, and we're coming up on the completion of the deepening and widening this next few months or something. Like that.
Next few months again. That's above my pay grade to determine when they're going to finish that project. But I wish they'd hurry up and do it so we could remove this excuse that somehow somebody's trying to stop the deepening and widening. That's never been what this is about. And it's not what it's about now.
Okay, so you get to frame it here for people who haven't heard you. What is it about?
Yeah, so there's as we maintain the channel, and those of you may not know, there's sediment that builds up in the channel to get those ships in and out. We've got to maintain it regularly, which means we dredge.
Yeah, it's not like you dredge it and widen and deepen it, and then it's...
It's not made of concrete.
Right, not made of concrete. You've got to keep it maintained.
That's right. And so as that dredge gets back in there, that sediment, they've got to dredge it back out. And so since 2012 in Mobile Bay, they've done this practice where they dispose of it in the bay, something that's not practiced anywhere else in the country, at least to the levels that it's done here. And so as a part of permitting this new project, the maintenance, of course, increased. So bigger channel. More sediment to dredge out of it, and so there was a group of citizens a whole bunch of them that were saying, hey, we can't let this happen. And so Baykeeper jumped in and decided we ought to do something about it. And since that time, that was August of last year, Sean, when this all kicked off.
Okay.
It was a much bigger issue than I thought it was going to be.
Sure.
But there's been about 13,000 letters written to our federal elected officials asking
you can't
them
get 13,
to stop this.
You can't get that many letters written about anything. That's significant.
Hey, I could not believe the community response. You know, I was working with a couple dozen, maybe 100 folks before this all hit the headlines, and turns out people really care about Mobile Bay, and this issue is presented in a way where they see, hey, something different ought to be done about this.
And one of the things here, like you and I started with our first conversation, and because I'm pro the port, I'm pro the deepening and the widening. Y'all are as well.
Absolutely.
It's not about don't deepen and widen. Let's deepen and widen. Let's get the business.
And let's maintain it, too.
Maintain it. It's just where you put the dredge.
That's
spoil.
It's pretty simple.
I mean, it's not don't do it. It's like, hey, you got a dredge. We get it. Now, let's not put it right back in and shower it back in the water where we can talk about the siltation issues, but just turbidity. I mean, that's
right.
The thing that we fight with the bay. You know,
as
for,
an angler,
from other causes as well.
And I know you're an angler, but, you know, those of us that like to fish, the turbidity is, first of all, it's killed a lot of the nursery areas. So the seagrass that requires sunlight to get through, it's like putting a tarp over your lawn, killed that. So we're seeing decreased numbers in blue crab and shrimp and then other, you know, speckled trout, stuff like that. And but then on top of that, fish don't like to be in that turbid mess. So even as we have tarpon runs and things like that, those have decreased significantly because it's a lot more difficult to get away from the predator, and it's a lot more difficult as a predator to find your prey.
Yes.
When you're in that cloudy mess. And depends on the fish, certainly, but these ones that at least you and I like to fish, those game fish, they don't like it either. And that's on top of, you know, that's just from an angler standpoint. These commercial guys are suffering from every which way. You got foreign imports that are just, I mean, some insane. The vast majority of U.S. seafood is foreign. I mean, what we eat here. And so these guys locally, they're getting that. And then now the habitat's being hurt so much.
Yeah.
On the shrimper side, those guys say, hey, when they're dumping that stuff out there, we just go on and go home because there's not going to be any shrimp. And then on the oyster side, those oyster beds are getting silted over and dying. And this year, I mean, when those catch reports come in, I'll come on the show and tell you what they are because it's been a terrible year. And they're concerned, you know, this may be because of these results, they may shut down the reef altogether here in the near future because there's so few oysters left.
After all the investments that have been made here with, once again, I always talk about silver linings and gray clouds. We talk about with COVID. One of them from the BP, the Deepwater Horizon spill, was having money finally to try to expand oyster footprints and places. There, and then you do that at the same time, you're covering it. And, you know, I know people will say, hey, William, look at our delta. Our systems are built through siltation. This has been happening for millennia. But it's the pacing. I mean, there's some siltation that happens in the delta system where the water slows down, it drops it out, builds new land, it goes on. But we're talking about at a level that's nowhere. I mean, I don't know what exponential it is, but it's crazy beyond what would be in the normal cycle.
Yeah, so these are rough numbers, obviously, but from what the studies have shown of what does come down from the delta, it's about 2.5 million cubic yards per year. So that's about 50 million cubic yards over this 20-year period that's being permitted. Now, on top of that, that's just what happens, we'll call it naturally.
Right.
On top of that, they're going to dredge 90 million cubic yards and dump it into the bay. So that's almost tripling the amount of suspended solids or sedimentation. And then I'll add to that, well, before I do that, I do want to tell you what is on the table, because folks want to know the specifics. What is the solution?
Right.
So the solution is, yes, it will cost more money to put this dredge material somewhere else. But there's good news. It's going to only cost the federal government more money. Let's remember who's doing this project. This isn't your buddy down the street. This isn't even our state government. This is the federal government that's saying, hey, we're going to permit ourselves to do this, and we don't have enough money to do that. Now, we're seeing a lot about where our money is going. And so
some money from some other cockamamie plans. And
I, for one, want my tax dollars go to fund this like they've done in other ports, Savannah, New Orleans.
That's
they're
the
spending
other thing,
the money.
Too. Like, even if you, I mean, if you just, if you're just jingoistic about it and say, hey, why not us? Because these other
ports got
this same thing where they're dredging it and they're putting it not right back in the water.
Right.
So we come back, we'll talk more about that. William Strickland, our guest with Mobile Baykeeper, keeping us chock full of steak. Joey Mason from Mason Hills Farm, and we are live at Robertsdale Power Equipment.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. 343-0106 on the text line. Get you through 343-0106. Even though I'm at the at Robertsdale Power Equipment, I can still monitor the text line. And in the mobile command unit with me, our buddy Joey Mason from Mason Hills Farm and Executive Director, Mobile Baykeeper William Strickland. Y'all, I want to read just a couple texts here, and then we can come back to the train we were on. Let's see. Captain Doug says, the channel dredging thing. I worked on a dredge tug in Tampa Bay. The practice there is to build small islands for recreational public use, which is something Mobile lacks in a huge manner. Why not cordon off a 1 or 2 acre site, then using turbidity screens to build one island at a time?
I'm asking the same question, Captain Doug. So if you find out the answer why we don't do something like that, you let me know.
Terry says, why don't they dry out and sell the dredge as fill dirt? Seems like it'd be nutrient rich.
Hey, once again, you find the solution, let me know. But I, you may want to read some more. I'll jump in.
Go
here.
Ahead, jump in. Yeah,
that's what we are, and I say we, I mean those 13,000 letter writers that's working on this, not me and a few folks that work in my office. But what we all are saying is, hey, there's lots of great options. It's not you got to go home, but you can't stay here, right? You just can't dump it in the bay. So we have to de-incentivize,
but it's like,
we're going to dump it in the bay, and then here's 15 different options. We've provided them a spreadsheet. We've worked with the Nature Conservancy, with the state, with other people having creative solutions that have worked on dredge.
Yeah, once again, this is not anti-deepening, widening, maintaining. That's not even – it's a yes from Baykeeper, right? Deep and wide and maintain. It's just – then when you get the dredge spoil, where does it go?
That's the bottom line.
Because people that don't pay attention to it will be like, oh, this is against deepening and widening. It's not.
Absolutely not. And so we jumped into solutions before. And so to follow up on that, we were talking about, hey, you know, why not here? This give us our due. I've been saying, and no offense to anybody from Biloxi that's listening, what we want is Savannah port, but we want it on Biloxi prices. And that's just not going to work, right? I mean, we got to say, if you're going to have a Savannah-style port, we have to fund it at the same level that Savannah port is funded. And I can't go to a chamber event where we're not talking about Savannah as an example of what we could be. And I want that too, but we can't then destroy the estuary along the way. So it's going to cost more. It's all federal.
Both are possible,
expense.
Though, right?
They're certainly possible everywhere else.
Yes. Could you have this great port that lets, you know, ships coming through the Panama Canal, you know, deep and wide, and they can come through, come in here. We can be doing all the great things to bring jobs here and business for not just here, the rest of the state of Alabama and parts of Mississippi and Georgia. At the same time, we preserve what we have here with Mobile Bay.
Of course we can have both, and in fact the former of having more ships and a better economy can help improve the latter. There's more money coming in here, there's more money to use for good projects to restore things. But that brings us back to, you know, I've heard here recently, now is not the time to be asking for more federal money either.
Yeah,
you know,
with DOGE and all that.
You've got DOGE, but people forget DOGE stands for Department of Government Efficiency, not slash everything. And people might have mixed opinions on that. But in this instance, when they put it in the bay, an estimated 35% of it ends up back in the channel, and they redredge that exact same material again. So that doesn't seem very efficient to me.
No, it doesn't.
And so more efficient options are to put it somewhere else. If they need to put it out in the Gulf, great. If we can find other places to put it, that's great. But this needs to stop, and it needs to stop now, because we're on our last legs as far as those harvestable oyster areas and things like that.
You know, efficiency is that's one of my jams, right? And I talked about this, and if Dolphin Island Mayor Collier's listening, he'll be like, oh, here goes Sullivan. He likes it, but I mean, we talked about this during a series of hurricanes. So the Corps had to do, by contract, they had to do the lowest cost disposal.
Mm-hmm.
and this is on the south end of the bay. They're dredging and taking this offshore to what they call the beneficial use area, and then hoping that sand would make it to Dauphin Island, like a bank shot, like Minnesota Fats making a bank shot to get it up there. Hurricanes hit, and then FEMA comes in and has to fund tens of millions of dollars. Billions, I think it's probably tens, but I'll just say millions, so I'm not incorrect. Millions and millions of dollars to put sand on to restore Dauphin Island. That was the sand that wanted to be there in the first place, but we had to take. So that it's just, yes, it's less expensive for the Corps then, but it's the same checkbook in the federal government that then has to come in and spend the money for the sand. You know, and it's different kind of dredge materials where you are in the bay, but there were sand. Taking, just go ahead and put it on Dauphin Island. I mean, just go ahead and, yes. To me, that was official. Maybe I'm too hayseed, but I mean, that's how I look at it.
Well, and you're exactly right, and this is why we're having people say, hey, we're sick of what the government, in particular the federal government, is doing, and we need a change. And so, in this instance, it's one of those opportunities to say, let's put our money where it's going to serve us. And so, if you haven't already, now's the time. You can go to SaveMobileBay.com and write your elected official. Senator Tuberville and Senator Britt are very aware. We took a visit up there with your friend Captain Rutland and and a few others, and were able to have that conversation. And so they know and understand what is on the table, and I believe are working towards it. But like all of us, it's important to know we have friends and we have people that are going to have our back if it upsets somebody else. And so now's the time to write them, let them know that their job is to represent you, that you appreciate what they've done for you thus far, but this is one where you'll have their back if there's some political consequence on the other side.
You know, and I'm looking through, somebody texts about ideas. This is what we all love to do. This is one of the things that kind of, you know, drives shows like this. We have a subject, people come up with ideas. But those ideas, let me interject, and you can correct me, those are great, but we can only get in that discussion once we get to the point and say, hey, they're going to do something other than putting it right back in the bay.
Yeah, and once again, it's a bureaucratic mumbo jumbo that makes it that way. But when you have the we can do this, it's permitted, it's cheaper, then that's what we're going to do. And so until that changes, there's not an incentive to look at some of these things. Now, I will say, because I don't want to be unfair, our core district has done a lot of beneficial use projects and does want to do a lot of beneficial use projects. But again, how we do that, having the right equipment here and having it being staffed properly where we can do what other places are doing, that's what we want to see. And I think the reality is that some of it is going to have to go offshore into the Gulf, and most ports do that. The guy that wrote in from Tampa, I happen to know that information. They do build those islands, but they also take quite a bit of it offshore and dump it off the shelf. And so that is the option, the standard practice for the excess around the country.
Well, this is the fun part of the conversation, coming up with ideas, but, you know, and I want to engage in that as well, but we got to, because I can sit here and say, hey, we build islands too, you know?
Yeah, definitely, we do.
And you look at Gilliard Island and think about the secondary and tertiary benefits. I mean, you're talking about bird, you know, sanctuary, nesting habitat and all that for a bunch of different birds out there. So we could do more of those, but we just have to, like, I love these ideas. I would love to sit in a, you know, big meeting with hundreds of people. Yeah.
You want me to get you an invitation?
Sure.
They won't let me in the door, but I can tell you where it meets at, and you can go.
I'd love to talk about these ideas, but the first thing is we have to say we got to do something else with it, and then we can do all the cool stuff.
Absolutely. We have to do something else with it, and we have to make sure that it's funded. And that's where I can also understand the Corps of Engineers going, we got to have the funding to do this right.
Yeah, they can't come up with the money on their own. You got to. Joey, what do you think?
Yeah, I think we should just call Elon, and I think we should call Elon and Trump and tell them what's going on down here and see if we can get a little funds that they've taken. What? You know, we're going to get this $5,000 check, I think.
Yeah.
Donate that $5,000 check to take a few cubic yards of mud offshore there.
Oh, I'm going to buy a TV.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at these electric chainsaws in here too.
Which, yes, it's a tough. If we had those checks in our pockets, it'd be tough
Whenever I lived on Dog River, we fished Mobile Bay, and you could see as a result of the stuff that the oil spill money was doing to revitalize what had happened and repopulate the fisheries and the oysters and those things, and then turbidity is just, you know, sediment is just wiping it all away. It's like we're,
you know, plants got to have sun, even if they're plants that grow in the water. I mean, that's one thing too, that just in the I guess looking forward, the forward thought of this is something. There is a point. I've talked about this with you, but I've talked about it with Ben Raines. I've talked about it with the commissioner. I've talked about this. We all know that there's a point where the snowball, or you crank the engine, it's going to run on its own. And that's yes. between oysters and seagrasses. But we have to get enough sunlight down there and get these things started. Crank the engine,
sunlight,
and then it'll
take, oxygen.
Then it'll start.
Yeah,
then
those are the things that we have to, the fuel we have to put in the engine. And right now we're pulling on it. We're sitting outside the power equipment here. they don't have machines like this. But when I was a kid, you'd pull on that thing and pull on that thing and pull on that thing, and you'd have to get around and tinker in there, make sure it had fuel in it and everything else to make sure. It
but
could
I mean,
going.
If we get for people to picture this stuff, I mean, people that spend a lot of time outside, this is probably elementary to them, but people don't like. If we did have clearer water, for, and there's going to be some times a year the water's not as clear as others. That's a normal cycle.
Of course,
but we had
yes.
clear water, then grass can grow in deeper water. Oysters can exist in deeper water, and they then are filtering more water that allows it to grow further. And we change, instead of just having a small fringe of places where submerged aquatics will grow,
yeah.
or oysters will grow. Think if you just took, if we look at the fringe of Mobile Bay, and expanded the place, the footprint for oysters and seagrasses by 100 yards.
Oh.
What would that mean in the shoreline of Mobile? How many acres of additional filtration would we
I mean, I certainly don't know the number, but what comes to my mind, because it probably won't happen in my lifetime. Maybe yeah. I'll be an old man, but my kids and grandkids sight fishing there on Point Clear.
Yeah.
Or somewhere on the western shore even, yep. right? Think about the coming out of the mouth of Dog River there. I mean, there's going to be grass. Hopefully, there'll be some oysters. You're going to be able to see a tail and redfish or something else in there. Giga flounder, mm-hmm. you know, without it being. I've been trying to get a giga flounder here recently, and, you know, we've had some success, but it's so darn hard to see compared to places that have that water clarity. And,
yeah.
and again, it's not to say our system will be clear like the Keys ever.
No, and our system's not supposed to be clear
Correct.
Like the Keys. That's why we have a lot more energy.
Right.
We have the Fertile Crescent
we don't
here.
Want it to
I'm
be
not
that
trying
way.
Yeah, it's not going to look like some area that doesn't. Even you go over to Florida's Big Bend where their rivers don't carry as far inland, you know,
right.
we're not supposed to be them. I just want to be, and we can look back at historical things. We can sit down and talk like I did growing up with people's grandfathers about what the
yep.
Delta was like. You can, Elmo Zeebock's book, The Second Head of Chocolata, I don't know if it's in print anymore. Yeah, I'm that much of a nerd. He grew up duck hunting and in the Delta, but also along Dog River, and he explains the grass flats. Where they were shooting canvasbacks outside of Dog River.
Don't get me started on
that. And
the
how
dog
big
thing.
And how big the grass flats were right there out of Dog River, where now there's not anything. I mean, he explains in this book, he's writing it, his experiences, and this would have been 1940s, I think, or something like that. So it's not like 1940s, what the grass was yeah. like in those things. So.
Well, there's a lot of work to be done before we can get there. Duck hunters, SaveMobileBay.com. I'm one of you. When I hear these old guys talk about ducks to darken the sky, mm-hmm. get teary-eyed. I do want to tell you some other positive things that are happening on this front, just so you know.
Okay,
so I got to give some credit to my boy Chip Brown, who's got some bills in right now protecting the commercial seafood industry, more testing involved. But
and this one just makes sense. Like,
oh,
give people the. I think if you give people the information, they will make good choices.
So he passed that law last year that where restaurants are required to put the place of origin, foreign, domestic,
where'd your shrimp come from, y'all?
or farmed on there. And if it's not on there, this is citizen enforced, y'all. So you can
yep.
Go to our website, mobilebaykeeper.org, to report an issue if you find it when you're at a restaurant. This year, he's doing testing of. Foreign seafood that comes in, because we don't know what's in the stuff as well as
well,
we ought.
You've seen some of the reports of what's in it, right?
Oh, in my previous work for a time, spent time in a village that was surrounded by prawn farms in India, and we don't have time for that story, but man, we'll come on and I'll tell you that one again. It's insane. But Chip also has another bill that is forming a seagrass task force that will have the lieutenant governor and a few others on it to say, hey, we need to do something about
yeah,
this.
Yeah,
this
I saw
is
that.
A state initiative that we need to do something about this. So that man cares, and if you want to see, if you see him or you want to drop him a line and say thank you, he is trying to represent your interests on the water and also represent your interests economically as well, as he's a big friend of the port and all that's going on there, and that he is the head of the Ports and Waterways Committee there in the state level.
Yeah, and actually, as the congressman from District 105, he's very close and on the front lines of all these issues in the south end of Mobile County. We'll go to the break. Coming right back, more of our conversation with William Strickland, also Joey Mason. This is Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you along. And it's good to check in with my buddy David at LCM Motor Cars and a midweek inventory check. Brother, how's it looking?
We got a bunch being loaded right now. I just got a notice that they've all left the gates. So that means they're putting them on the truck. We should have a truckload here in the morning, hopefully, if worst case, tomorrow afternoon. But we are busy, busy, busy out here today. So if you're interested in anything, you need to come see us. We got a great inventory and great financing.
Okay, so you know what's coming in. They had to, like, pick one out, preview something, because if people have already looked and they go, okay, I'm looking for what you got. Give me a little candy here.
We got another Silverado four-wheel drive coming. We got a Jeep Cherokee four-wheel drive. Not an all-wheel drive, a four-wheel drive, so you can separate the two. Then pretty nice Terrain. I think we got a 2022 GMC Terrain coming in. So there's a bunch of different stuff. I mean, we got a bunch of good looking stuff coming in. We got some good looking stuff here on the ground.
Okay. And if y'all are like a shut in and you don't, because he's going to tell you how to see him in person, which is the best thing to do, but people can browse the inventory online.
Yes. LCMMotorCars.com.
Check it out there. Or the most fun, seeing you in person, how they find you.
Well, not everybody thinks that I'm fun, but we're at Highway 90 and Plantation. We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. You can give us a call at 251-375-0068. Once again, that website's lcmmotorcars.com.
Thanks, David.
Have a good day, bud.
Yeah, you too. There's David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Just a few minutes left here. We are at Robertsdale Power Equipment, and it is their 32nd annual open house. It is today, but it's also tomorrow. 10% off handheld equipment, 10% off batteries and accessories, $100 to $1,000 off select mowers, 15% off in stock parts, y'all. If you're like me, you're like, well, I got what I need. You got the blades, you got all your new stuff, because right now it's 15% off for those mowers. Skag, Steel, Husqvarna, all those on demonstration here, too. What's new from them, you can check it out as well. Speaking of which, like, this is, you know, several people, like, I missed Summerdale. Tony came by, and we were in here running our mouths. We didn't get to visit with him, but he said, I did get one of those battery-powered steel string trimmers, so... thanks for talking about it. You got me in there, and I just bought one. So, yeah, this is, listen, there's, you come in here and see what's new for yard equipment. They've got it. And the electric stuff, y'all, I mean, we're three dudes sitting in here. And, I mean, growing up, if it wasn't gas, it, you know, I wouldn't want to do it. But the electric stuff now, run the dang chainsaw.
That's the one that got me. When I used my buddy's electric chainsaw, I said,
you thought it was going to be weak, right? You thought it was going to be this little thing for like trimming something in the front hedge or something. And
it's instant power.
Yeah.
It's just instant.
Yep. I mean, it's just like an electric vehicle with that constant torque on it. So y'all check it out here. You know, you gave out the web address and you talked about already the number of people writing letters. Let's double that. Let's make it 26,000.
Yeah, let's do it. I mean, like I said, your elected officials are aware. I believe they want to help, but they've got to make sure that they know that they're representing their people. And so, pretty simple. Senator Tuberville, Senator Britt, Representative Moore, we're going to write them and say, hey, we love what you do. Thank you for representing us. This is something that we're going to have your back on. Because anything you try to do in Washington is going to have some political implications.
Yes.
You got to make sure it's worth it. Because there's always going to be the next thing, and we need good people there to do the next thing. And so we've got to have our politicians back as much as they're going to have ours, which, you know, I know there's some folks that think they don't have ours very much. If you want to write an angry one, hey, that's on you. But I can tell you I've met with them, and I believe they want to help.
And also, as we took a look at this nationwide discussion of efficiency and where our taxpayer dollars go to, foreign countries, restoring things in foreign countries, right? So we do this thing, and we can get it. That's a whole other discussion. But wouldn't that mean we have done all the restoring things we need to do back home? before we go restore something, because I mean, I'm looking at the text here. This is stuff I grew up with. I don't know who this texter is, unnamed texter, but thanks for the program about the bay. I remember the grass beds from childhood 65 plus years ago. Many more crabs and fish then. I got the stories from my buddy's grandfathers when I was growing up and books like the one I told you about earlier. There is a benchmark. We're not saying taking it back to before, you know, before man was here, but I mean, take it back to what it was in 1940.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're not talking crazy stuff.
Well, and we don't even like to use the term taking it back because, you know, what's lost is lost and what comes back will be different, but it could be better. It's preserving a way of life is the way we like to think about it. So it may not be exactly the way it was in the 40s, but we know that we need these seagrasses.
But there's a baseline to try to
and we're working hard to define that baseline. I'm more being sensitive to my science friends. They don't like that taking it back language. But if you grew up duck hunting in open water in coastal Alabama, that's getting harder and harder to do. There's less opportunity. There's less habitat. It's called widgeon grass for a reason.
Correct.
It's not named that because they once saw a widgeon fly by. This is what they eat. So you can visit SaveMobileBay.com again if you want to take action and make sure that we preserve our bay against this federal mud dumping.
And as I point out, my second favorite puddle duck in the world, the widgeon. So you can't be wrong.
It's a beautiful bird.
We'll do it again tomorrow. Thank you, Joey.
Thank you, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, William. And Paul Feinbaum next.